Welcome to the world of dark films. Films that scare, entice, and invite children into the underbelly of life as we know it. Come on a journey with the Literary License Podcast as we explore in our Season 7 retrospective of dark family films as part of our 2-for-1.
Literary License Podcast and Dark Families Week, we'll be discussing two films that deal with dark family issues. And the films today will be Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. And before we get started, let's find out who's with us. We got Vicky Ray with us. Hello, Vicky.
Hey, guys.
We got Joe Randazzo with us.
Hey, everyone.
And I'm your host, Keith Shago. And let's start off with Dark Crystal. The Dark Crystal is a 1982 dark fantasy film directed by Jim Henson and Frank Oz. It stars the voices of Stephen Gerlach, Lisa Maxwell, Billy Whitelaw, Percy Edwards, and Barry Denon. The film was produced by ITC Entertainment and the Jim Henson Company and distributed by Universal Pictures. The plot revolves around Ben and Kira, two gelflings on a quest to restore balance to the world of Thra and overthrow the evil ruling Skeksis. The Skeksis, by restoring a powerful broken crystal. It was marketed as a family film, but was notably darker than the creator's previous material. The animatronics used in the film were considered groundbreaking for the time, with most creatures, like the Gelflings, required around 4 puppeteers to achieve full manipulation. The primary concept artist was fantasy illustrator Brian Frode, famous for the distinctive fairy and dwarf designs. Frode also collaborated with Henson in the 1986 fantasy film Labyrinth. The Dark Crystal was produced by Gary Coates, while the screenplay was written by David O'Dell, and whom Henson previously worked as staff writer for The Muppet Show. The film score was composed by Trevor Jones. The film initially received mixed reviews from mainstream critics, while being criticized for its darker, more dramatic tone in contrast to Henson's previous works. It was praised for its narrative, aesthetic, and caricatures. Over the years, it has been reevaluated by critics and garnered a cult following. An Emmy Award-winning prequel television series, The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance, premiered on Netflix in 2019. What we're going to do is cut to the trailer of The Dark Crystal and be right back.
In a place outside time lies a mystical realm of sound and vision. A wondrous civilization. Where good and evil struggle to possess the dark crystal.
Welcome back to Literary License Podcast. We're discussing The Dark Crystal. So, Vix, what are your thoughts of The Dark Crystal?
I was really pissed we didn't get a second season out of that stuff on Netflix, because that was actually really well done. I enjoyed that. I love The Dark Crystal. I won't complain or say nothing bad about it. I thought it was really groundbreaking. I thought it was ahead of its time for back then. I love Fizgig. I guess it's a dog. Fizgig is kind of like a dog, isn't he? I just, they're all endearing characters, even the Skeksis, who are just, you know, they're just vile and evil looking. And I thought it was kind of a really neat interpretation of a story on how you got to find the balance in life, like how the evil and the good have to find some way to come together to have that balance. It was like an epic puppet saga. I don't know how else to explain it. There's always something cool to notice if you watch it again, like the little puppet things that they eat that you don't really notice, the little creatures that the Skeksis eat. But I really enjoyed the Netflix that when they came out with that series. I really was kind of hoping that they would do something with the rest of it. They haven't done nothing yet.
I didn't know there was a Netflix series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea.
An episode.
Yeah. I literally just learned about it when Keith mentioned it in the talk up in the beginning. I had no idea. I'm going to have to check it out. I love Muppets, so I'm always down to watch anything with Muppets. But
I froze. What happened?
I don't know. I was just saying I'm down to check it out. I'm always down to check out anything with Muppets. I don't think I've done enough mind-altering drugs in my lifetime to fully enjoy this movie, like, to the
level.
Oh, my
God, I love it without the mind-altering drugs. I just think it's just brilliant how they put all this together, and it's just puppetry, you know?
Man, and we're doing this a month before. I think it's next month on Disney Plus. We're getting a Jim Henson documentary.
Oh, really?
It's just a new documentary.
Just a new documentary.
New documentary about his life. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. But yeah, this was just most of the time. I think Sean was sitting, you know, a few feet away from me, and he turned at one point, and he looks at like the look of just puzzled bewilderment on my face, and just kind of laughed. I'm like, what the fuck is this? It's strange because I'm not used to seeing Muppets not interact with humans at all.
Yeah.
So
I think that's what makes this film stronger, actually, because
no people.
Well, you kind of just stay in this world.
Yeah.
When we get to Labyrinth, I'll elaborate a little bit more on that. But this, you kind of just got, you know, it's beautifully filmed. It looks beautiful.
Oh my God.
You're kind of like stuck in this world, and you kind of take it all for you. Just
the
take
puppets
it
are beautiful too, and then you got the evil ones, you got the beautiful ones. You know,
they
put the work in
the Skeksis. I used to like go.
Yeah, what was his name?
And I still do that. I don't know why.
That was his name, Chamberlain.
But he was that's the Miss Piggy sound. Miss Piggy like. It's her sound. I'm guessing that's Frank Oz.
Probably. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at some of the voice acting, I'm Billy Whitelaw from The Omen.
I love Billy Whitelaw. I used to have such a crush on her.
Yeah. But they had some really good. I mean, you could tell that. I mean, by this time, Henson moved everything to England anyway at this point. And, you know, so there's a lot of British talent that's going on through this. But, I mean, you know, Barry Denon. I mean, you know Barry Denon. He is pilot from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. He shows up in weird places like The Shining and stuff like that. You just don't expect to see him in.
Do you know that he was dating Barbara Streisand and got Barbara Streisand started on her career?
I had no idea. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a totally different factoid for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, the Jim Henson situation is kind of funny. I mean, it's quite sad because I remember watching this documentary with the Muppets and Sesame Street, and they're talking, you know, they're like showing clips and stuff like this. And then they get this letter from this kid saying, "I'm so sorry that your father has died." And then you see how the Muppets, like, oh my God, he's dead. Like, it's like their tribute to him. It was really heart-wrenching. And I mean, you felt like crying because you had like Big Bird going, "We're going to miss our father." And it's just like, yeah. Oh my God.
Because you can't really disassociate with them when you've grown up with them. So like they're like real in your head in some weird illogical way. So yeah, I get it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, he's had, I mean, you know, he I think he's probably the one person who's taken puppetry further than anyone has ever happened.
God, yeah, I think so.
You know, when you see how, you know, if you see, you know, if you watch the documentary about I Am Big Bird, about the guy who is Big Bird, who does the voice,
Carol Spinney,
that outfit. Yeah.
I was going to say Carol Spinney was actually the uncle of a friend of mine that used to do theater with me in New York.
No kidding.
Yeah. Mm. I heard he's a great guy. Never got a chance to meet him, though.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
Big Bird made me cry twice because of, you know, I saw the thing Keith's talking about where they announced Jim Henson's death, and also Follow That Bird had me crying in the movie theater from what my parents told me. I was too young to remember it. My parents were like, oh my God, you were like crying uncontrollably. So Big Bird did that to me twice. So,
well, yeah, even when you go on YouTube and see the funeral of Jim Henson, they got the Muppets there. And you're like,
that's probably how we would have wanted it, though. I mean, that's how he spent his life. That was his great life.
Well, he was buried with the original Kermit, wasn't he? So,
oh, was he?
I didn't know he was buried with Kermit. I knew he was buried in one of them, but I didn't.
Yeah, well, he's the original Kermit. I mean, the original Kermit puppet, the first one.
Well, Jim Henson's one of the first like celebrity deaths that like I remember because he died in what like the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm.
I was still a really young kid, so yeah, his was one of the ones that like I remember and like actually affected me. And I think it's because I watched the Muppet Babies religiously on TV on Saturday mornings.
That's so cute, Joe.
Muppet Babies make our dream come true.
as these things become, it just shows like how much everybody loved Jim Henson.
Well, he touched everybody's life generation after generation.
Well, what I mean is if you look at that show, you can't put it out now because you would have to get so many clearances because of all the footage that they use from different movies and different TV shows. This one's owned by this one. This one's owned by this one. But everybody loved Jim Henson so much that they were all like, that everybody's like, yeah, we're totally going to let you use footage from this movie, from this series, from this thing that weren't all owned by the Jim Henson Company, but now they're all in a vault because...
Well, all the big stars used to get on, you know, Sesame Street and do their things with the Muppets. It was a big deal to get a Muppet spot.
Still to this day.
Well, I tell you, if I ever was famous, there's two things I would want to do with my life. Is A, voice a Disney cartoon because you'll live forever. Right. And second of all, be a guest star on Sesame Street.
Yeah, that would be great.
Then you know you made it.
Yeah, especially the Sesame Street part.
Yeah,
I mean they still do it now. Yeah. You still see it. It's just we're a lot older now, so we're not in that.
Yeah, I have no idea who watches Sesame. I haven't watched Sesame Street.
I remember like 10 years ago, longer than that because my mother was still alive. So my mother died 15 years ago. So it must be at least 15 years ago. I showed my mother that because she loved Andrea Bocelli, and Andrea Bocelli was on there, I think, singing with Elmo.
Mm.
So, yeah. It's...
I mean, Lady Gaga was on there. I know that.
Madonna's been on there. Everybody's been on there.
Yeah.
God, I mean, you know, I can't think of any actor, honestly, that's not been on there.
It's like a rite of passage. That's how...
If you're worth your salt, you've been on The Muppet Show.
I mean, did he do
Fraggle Rock too?
Fraggle Rock's in.
Oh,
the best celebrity appearance on Sesame Street is REM singing "Shiny Happy Monsters."
Oh, and really?
they had the little Kate Pearson monster like dancing around on Wii 52.
Yes. I mean, even in the movies, the most recent Muppet movies, you know, you get, you know, Ricky Gervais, Tina Fey, you get like huge stars in them. You get whoever is like a huge star in the zeitgeist. You know how dark this stuff started out though. Like Jim Henson before. Have you ever seen the Wilkins coffee commercials?
Yeah,
I can try to remember.
Vicky, you have to Google these later.
So Wilkins basically, coffee commercials.
It'll be two monsters sitting next to each other, And one of them would be asking the other one about his thoughts on Wilkins Coffee. And if he didn't like him, he'd shoot him. He'd drop a rock on him. He would stab him.
How did I not see that?
They are wild. Yeah, Google. Fuck, I'm using my phone for the podcast. I was like, I'll send them to you now. Then I realized, no, my phone's here. I can't, like, leave it.
I'll look it up. Wilkins. I don't know how I don't remember that.
It's great. The little monster, it kind of looks like Kermit. The little monster,
I cannot remember.
Sociopath. There's like one video that's just like 20 minutes straight of like all these commercials. They are so much fun. It's just Muppet Murder, like right before your eyes.
I wonder if he used to do Emu from the Hudson Brothers. That was Sid Meier's prop. Never mind.
Emu was wasn't a Muppet, but they used to appear like here and there and everywhere. And then, of course, the Muppet Show kind of where they took the variety show format and made the Muppet Show.
Yep.
And
that kind
of pushed them. The Muppet movies, Muppets on Ice. I mean, it was quite a lucrative thing, still is.
Yeah,
still got a lot of bang for its buck.
Muppets Take Manhattan is still my favorite of the movies.
Yeah,
and one of the best Christmas carols is the Muppet Christmas Carol.
I love a Muppet Christmas Carol. We just watched it this. Excuse me. Woke up late and I'm eating my breakfast as we're doing.
It's all right. We get you.
Poking along the way. So my apologies to everyone listening. No, we just watched a Muppet Christmas Carol this last year. I think I watch it pretty much almost every year at this point. It is one of the best versions of it.
Yes, it is. It's a lot of fun. But I mean, you got to admit, though, I mean, the Dark Crystal is unlike anything you've ever seen, at least up until that time, because I had not seen anything like that up until that time when it came out. I was wowed when I went to go see it. We were on lots of drugs in the 80s, so I was definitely ready for that.
Well, I think, I mean, as we kind of discussed, you know, previously, where the wild things are.
Right.
That. The movie itself, if you've seen the movie by Spike Jonze, of Where the Wild Things Are,
that was a gritty movie. That was really gritty. I mean, it made me almost uncomfortable, the Where the Wild Things Are. I love the book, but the movie gave me a comfort issue. I don't know. Maybe it was because I felt I needed a shower because no one was bathing. No one was taking care of this kid properly.
Well, you know? I think, but the thing is what, you know, I think where it ties in with Dark Crystal is that they're kind of marketed as family films, but they're not really family films. Like, if the Where the Wild Things Are, I can't picture kids seeing it because of the way it's filmed, but when you're an adult or a late teenager to adult, it's a great film, though I think kids will be bored with it. And I think the Dark Crystal kind of suffers a little bit of that as well. I think if you can be too young for this film.
Yeah, you definitely can.
And I think, you know, so when you look at it, it's like it's a family film. Well, it's probably more of a late teenager to adult film, really. And I think that's probably where, you know, it kind of suffers a little bit when you market it as a family film. But, you know, but the Muppets and Jim Henson's known as family entertainment. So this is kind of, I would say this is probably more of a PG film than it would be a G film.
I think it is PG, isn't it? Or is it rated G?
I'm not quite sure, actually, but I know that there's a lot of stuff that kind of goes over your head. And I know that when I saw it and see it now, I have more appreciation for it now than I did when it came out. And even though I was in my teenage years, I thought, well, it's okay. But now that I'm older, I think the themes and everything kind of work better for me.
Well, that makes sense. I wasn't sure going into it yesterday if I had ever seen it before, because I know people have spoken to me about it and I just never remembered it. And it turns out this is not one of the movies that I grew up on. I had no recollection of it while I was watching it. And I wondered if, because this was my first time viewing, and I wonder if this is the kind of movie where it seems to be the kind of movie where I have to probably watch it a few more times instead of just like sitting on the couch and letting it wash over me. I probably should go back and revisit it again. And a couple of times just to catch everything that's put in there, because this was layered. Like, I thought it was going to be like just a Muppet movie. Like, I'm just going to put it on. And I'm just going to veg out in front of the TV and everything's going to be spelled out for me. And that was not the case with this movie. Mm. You need to, you know, you need to actively watch this, not passively watch it. At the same time, though, I wonder if this was a kind of movie where if they would have put six-year-old me in front of it, if I would have liked it. I don't know. I feel like if I had grown up with this movie and I'd seen it 100 times, maybe I would appreciate it more. I think I definitely need to rewatch it. I think there's a lot in there that I just did not necessarily grasp right away. So,
but even the end of the film is kind of shattering, you know, when they get all caught up by the crystal and there's like the situation, kind of stars out situation in the light, and then they turn into these celestial beings to watch over, some of them, it's kind of a bizarre thing, because some of the Geflings and stuff like that are sometimes look very human. They move very human, like in certain instances. You know, this is before CGI, so basically who's ever working the puppetry, because it takes four puppeteers to do one Gefling. But there are sometimes that they have like this kind of human, this kind of human-like way of walking and the way that they maneuvered them. And it's like, if you think about it, that's quite ahead of its time. Because even like when you look at Nightmare Before Christmas, a lot of the times that they look a bit more human is when they're using the CGI to, you know, do the stop motion.
Yep. So, what happened?
No, we're still here.
No, sorry, I was adjusting my camera and I think I just knocked out the sound for a second.
So if you look at how far Jim Henson has come, I mean, this is probably his biggest achievement as far as moving puppeteering to the next level.
As far as it being a movie where like nothing else is happening, it's all puppeteering. Like there's no no interaction with real humans, but we'll see that in the next one, how that different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was amazing. They really put the work in, because you could see it in the set building, you could see it in the puppetry, you could see it in everything.
It's a beautiful film. It's just beautiful. I don't know. I mean, I just can't think of anything wrong with it. It was so unique and so cool for, you know, at least back then. We didn't have all the CGI and all the fancy shit that everybody's got now. So when that came out, I was like, oh, this is fucking cool, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to figure out how long it took from to make this, actually.
I would assume, I could probably look it up, probably like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, because it had to take a little while, actually. And just, I mean, another thing is, you know, when you got like the Geflings, it took four puppeteers for the one Gefling. So you got the two Geflings. So that means you got 8 people
next to the two leaders.
Just next to each other. Just kind of, it's kind of like, how in the hell they didn't just bump into each other all the time?
They probably did. There's probably lots of bloopers.
it's a marvel to look at. And I have to sit there and say that I saw this in high definition in HD. It's probably one of the only 80s films that is kind of special effects ridden that doesn't suffer from being on HD as well, which is quite amazing. Because normally it's like, ooh, look at the strings. I can see the strings, you know. Pull the strings.
So the Henson people were fantastic at making sure you didn't see anything.
Yeah.
They were fantastic at that.
So they really knew what they were. So
what are they? Because they kind of looked humanoid, but also kind of horse-ish. Vicky said dog-like. I could see the dog.
Well, Fizgig was like a pet dog, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Chamberlain and the Skeksis, they were like the evil scarecrows that go to the gentle dog-like creatures, something out. You know, the kind, gentler monk kind of creatures. I mean, the Skeksis were just vile. I mean, they were eating, they were cannibalistic. They were nasty. They just looked vile.
Well, they looked like buzzards almost.
Yeah, with the way their necks kind of hunched and stuff. Yeah.
And I mean, the dog thing, well, we kind of seen the dog anyway. I mean, I think the dog came out of Fraggle Rock, didn't it?
Maybe. Maybe. Like the same dog from Fraggle Rock. Fraggle Rock came after, though, I think.
Yeah. So they might have used the dog again in Fraggle Rock. So I don't know. The dog, we've seen them do the dog kind of thing before, where they kind of dog, you know, had the dog. They did have a Muppet dog running around on Sesame Street for a little while as well.
Oh, yeah. So. Right. I loved Fraggle Rock. God, I
not to mention, Not to mention Rolf.
Yeah.
You gotta love Rolf.
Well, I guess what we should do maybe is rate Dark Crystal, starting with you, Vix. How many stars do you give Dark Crystal?
Oh, absolutely a 5, just because it's so different, beautifully done. It was just a different thing for back then. It just kind of popped off the screen at you.
And what about yourself, Joe?
Probably a 4. If I was high, probably a 5. It's like I said, this is the kind of thing where, like, I feel like it's so layered that I have to go back and watch it again because this was a first time viewing for me, and I feel like I need to revisit it, and I need to look at all the layers again, because if we're just talking just the work that went into it, it is a 5 out of 5, because all the puppeteering, all the set designs, all the
series on Netflix that's still up, only had one season. But I was really disappointed. Look at that.
I didn't know that existed.
They didn't do nothing else with it. They set it up for a second season. I think COVID happened, though. Everything got shoved aside, I guess, because of COVID.
Yeah, no, anyway, think about
it. I think it was an expensive series as well. So that
it looked very expensive.
2019 would have been when I was running around doing all that stuff for Troma, and I was doing a lot of different things. So that might be why I missed it. I didn't really have the time to check out a lot of stuff at that time.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a solid 5. I mean, it's a great film. It works on a lot of levels, and it's one of those films I enjoy more as an adult than I did when it first came out. So.
I've always enjoyed it. If it's on, I'll always watch it.
And this brings us to the next film, which is Labyrinth, which is a 1986 musical fantasy film directed by Jim Henson with George Lucas as executive producer. Based on a conceptual design by Brian Froude, the film was written by Terry Jones, and many of its characters are played by puppets produced by Jim Henson's Creature Shop. The film stars Jennifer Connelly as 16-year-old Sarah and David Bowie as Jareth, the Goblin King. In Labyrinth, Sharon embarks on a quest to reach the center of an enormous otherworldly maze to rescue her infant half-brother, Toby, whom she whisked away to Jareth. The film stars a collaboration between Henson and Froude following their previous collaboration, The Dark Crystal. Terry Jones of Monty Python wrote the first draft of the film's script early in 1984, drawing on Froude's sketches for inspiration. Various other scriptwriters rewrote it and added it to, including Laura Phillips, Lucas, Dennis Lee, and Elaine May. Although Jones received the film's sole screenwriting credit, it was shot from April to September 1985 on the location Upper Nyack, Piermont, and Haverstraw, New York, and Elstree Studios and West Wycombe Park in the United Kingdom. New York Times reported that Labyrinth has a budget of $25 million. The film underperformed at the United States box office, grossing $12.9 million during its U.S. theatrical run. However, success in the United Kingdom and overseas, grossing over $34 million worldwide. Labyrinth was first met with a mixed critical response upon its release, which contributed to a difficult period of Henson's career, according to his son, Brian Henson. It was the last feature film that Henson directed, and over the years, it has been reevaluated by many critics. Its success on home video and television broadcast, Labyrinth has gained a large cult following. The film has been adopted into a variety of media, including books, video games, board games, and comics. Tokyo Pop published a 4-volume comic sequel, Return to Labyrinth, between 2006 and 2010, and Arcadia Entertainment published a comic prequel, Labyrinth, Coronation, between 2018 and 2019. In January 2016, it was announced that a sequel is in development, which screenwriter Nicole Perlman described as a more of a spin-off in the same fictional universe. What we're going to do is cut to the trailer of Labyrinth and be right back.
TriStar Pictures announces the collaboration of 3 extraordinary talents. Jim Henson, creator of The Muppets and Dark Crystal.
Hmm?
George Lucas, creator of the Star Wars saga. And one of the most innovative forces in modern entertainment, David Bowie. Together, they will take you into a dazzling world of fantasy and adventure.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
A world where anything seems possible, and nothing is what it seems.
Everything I've done for you. I move the stars for no one.
The world of Labyrinth.
Hello, welcome back to Literary Legends Podcast. We're discussing Labyrinth. So, Joe, what are your thoughts on Labyrinth?
I had forgotten how much fun this movie is. Because up until last night, I hadn't seen it in decades. David Bowie is fantastic. He's fantastic as a villain. He's not really a villain, though.
He's kind of a lovable cad. He's a goblin king. He's kind of a douche. Yeah. But he does.
Don't forget, he still does abduct a child.
He does it well.
Lovable cad or not, he does abduct a child. And man, Jennifer Connelly, during this period, she's in so many movies I love that she was still like, she was a teenager at this point, but she was in Dario Argento's Phenomena, like I think the year before. Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America was around this time.
Right.
And then Labyrinth. She's in a lot of movies during this time period that I just...
I was awful busy back then. I wonder if she's... Is she still busy? What happened to her?
Wasn't she Tom Cruise's love interest in...
Not so.
Top Gun Maverick? That was Jennifer Connelly, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was her. That's right. You're right. I forgot that was her. She looked really good.
She still does. Yeah, she still
aged very well. She looks fantastic.
And for once, they gave Tom Cruise a love interest that was age appropriate.
Yes. It was age appropriate.
For once. He's not 60-year-old Tom Cruise dating a 35-year-old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's a pretty hot 50-something, 50, 60-year-old, though.
She really is. She still looks amazing.
She's kind of strange because she was meant to be of great things, Jennifer Connelly. You know, she did Dario Argento, of course, but then she did Once Upon a Time in America, and she's supposed to be his huge breakout star, but then she kind of just appears, and it's really hard to see her in this after seeing Requiem for a Dream, but... she's always a big actress, but this is kind of like... But she's always kind of picked very bizarre kind of roles, hasn't she? She's not your normal kind of actress.
Yeah, and I think that's what I like about her is that she... I think she was also the remake of Dark Water, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Is that her? Yeah, I think that's what I've liked about her. I mean, she's always had a steady career. Like, she's never, you know, she's never, like, disappeared. She's, like, every generation of film that I could think of from the time she started in the 80s, I could think of something in every decade that she's done. So
I totally forgot about her being in Top Gun. I totally forgot.
Yeah, I mean, I only saw that the one time in the theater, and I keep saying I gotta rewatch that to see if it works as well on the home media stuff. But yeah, she's amazing. I always liked everything that she did. Let me try to like not get these two movies mixed up.
Was David Bowie kind of in love with her, obsessed with her in this? Didn't he want to keep her there, or he wanted to give her everything? I mean, but he was kind of an unusual, odd attraction. Kind of, I don't know.
I mean, go ahead.
I mean, I appreciate the work that went into this movie, but I can't say, I feel like it's dumbed down a little bit.
Oh,
in what way?
Yeah.
You know,
I get you, but I'm trying to figure
out. I find David Bowie kind of like a gay version of Duran Duran running around. And, you know, he's got his Bonnie Tyler, I Need a Hero haircut on, you know, or Susie and the Banshees. Sort of, and
I thought he was kind of hot being the Goblin King. I don't know, pretty androgynous man. I loved him as the Goblin King. He was just sexy.
So I think it's dumbed down, but it was aimed at kids. This was aimed at kids more so than even the Dark Crystal, so.
I don't know about that completely. For little kids, I don't know. It could go either way, little kids or adults, but there's something in it that everybody could watch without totally lowering your IQ. But I mean,
that's another thing that Henson was great at, because even if you watch the Muppet movie, all the Muppet movies now as an adult, there are jokes in there that you're not going to get as a little kid, but your parents probably chuckled at. Now, when you watch, you're like, oh, that's what that was.
And it was kind of like Never-Ending Story-ish, kind of, too, in a little bit of a way.
Yeah.
The
story was boring as fuck, and this wasn't. So the Never-Ending Story was apt. It never fucking ended. So this was
But weren't you traumatized when Artex drowned?
We discussed it back then. I think had they done it later in the movie, I probably would have. But when you're doing it like 10 minutes into the movie, I don't know, man. I don't have the same reaction to it as most people did.
It was the theme was more involved. I was just thinking of the characters. They just reminded me of a lot of what I saw in the Neverending Story for some reason. A lot of the characters.
Well, I mean, it does have the kind of
maybe the vibe, I guess.
Yeah, the vibe, because you have the same kind of framing around it, where you have Jennifer Connelly is reading Labyrinth at the beginning of the beginning of the movie. So she, you know, it has that Never-Ending Story quality in that it's the whole fantasy realm thing.
And who doesn't hate their stepbrother or sister?
I mean, if he was older, like 5. I can understand hating him.
But he's just a little baby.
Yeah. He's not even like
looks like they were forcing her to babysit constantly, and that she was just getting tired of it, so she was kind of hating on him.
Yeah, she's like a 16, what is she, like 15, 16 years old? She wants to go out and hang out with her friends.
Yeah.
What's a babysit her little baby brother?
It doesn't seem like she has any friends either, though, so I don't know who she's hanging out with.
Yeah, that's true, because she's reading Labyrinth really out loud in the park.
Yeah. She's just lazy. She just didn't want to do anything. She just wanted to read her books and live in her fantasy world, I guess. I mean, there's a couple problems I have with the film. The songs, they should not have put songs there because they're really bad songs.
I was really surprised they gave David Bowie bad songs. Because he's like the ultimate entertainer, is one of my favorite stars. I was very disappointed. I've always been disappointed. He still sings it. He still brings it. But you're right about the music. You're totally right about.
Well, there's one song in it that they did release as a single. So you think, okay, did they do that to help put, you know, because this is like do a music video, sell the movie, sell the song.
Yeah.
we had Top Gun and all the other stuff at that time, and
right. You know, Highlander, I think, came out around that time too.
Yeah, so I think that there is that a little bit. I like some of the ingeniousness of it, like, you know, the robot thing, and you got like the little creature inside working the robot, and then the goblin. And every time I saw the goblin, I was like, God, is that Warwick Davis in that suit? I don't know why, but I'm just not that. Because whenever you see a little person, dwarf or whatever, you always think Warwick Davis. Warwick Davis is probably involved somewhere.
Warwick Davis, right? Tony Cox, Billy Barty, and Deep Roy. Well, which I think Deep Roy was in the previous one. I think Deep Roy was in Dark Crystal. I don't know if he was in this. Yeah. But those are the four that like always pop up everywhere.
But I mean, there's a lot good to say about it. I just don't think it, you know, if I'm comparing this with Dark Crystal, for me, I think the humans kind of take away from some of the magic, because what you kind of get is what you get with the Muppet Show, but I have this problem with Star Wars as well. So I think this is more personal to me, where I'm really enjoying Star Wars, and then they go into the bar and there's these Muppets in the bar. And then you got Yoda as the Muppet. And I love Yoda, don't get me wrong. And I love Baby Yoda as well. But it just feels like, when you know, it's kind of like going on. It's either had to, in Dark Crystal, he's full of Muppets, and you kind of get involved in the world, and you stay in that world. When you start mixing humans and Muppets, it becomes more Muppet movie, and less, it takes you sometimes out of the world.
Well, because you got to get the human dynamic in there. That's taking away from the fantasy. Because let's face it, this is a spoiled, willful teenage girl that needs her ass beat, basically, for being a little shit. So, you know, she wishes her son to go to Never Never Land, and the Goblin King is going to turn him into stone or some shit. So she deserves everything to get. But she's a spoiled teenager, so...
I'm just glad that Michael Jackson didn't do the part of David Bowie, because it would have a whole different meaning now.
Oh, God.
A lot.
It could have gone, I guess it could have gone another way if we wanted it to.
Yeah. But it is a good film. There are just certain scenes. I mean, there's some fantastic scenes in it.
Right.
But it does kind of slow down sometimes. You're kind of going, like, the musical numbers just slow it down. You're just like, you know, what about the babe? Babe? Like, you're like, okay, get on with it, you know? And then there's another one that's like, get on with it.
Well, you know, they're going to have to let him sing. You know, he has to have a couple of, you know, songs in there somewhere.
But there's quite a few movies that he did that he didn't sing that he's really good at. Like Mary, you know, The Hunger, he didn't have to sing.
The Hunger, he didn't sing. No, that's true.
You know, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, he didn't have to sing in that. The Man
Who... No, he did. You're right.
He could have sang the closing credit song. He could have
maybe this was kind of more rock star-ish than The Hunger, you know?
Because if you look at the movie he did before that he sang, that was kind of bombed as well. Absolute Beginners.
Yeah, right. I hate it when you're right. Yeah, but you are.
Yeah.
Fire Walk With Me, he didn't sing either, and I love that movie. But he's only in one scene, so.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of would like to, this is nothing against David Bowie, but I kind of wish the Goblin King was a Muppet creature.
Instead of a sexy, androgynous man.
Well, they could add a voice by David Bowie. It wouldn't bother me to have a voice by him. But I just think of that, you know, she enters this fantasy world and it's just Muppets. And that would make a little bit more sense than to have a Goblin King that's human and Muppets all around him.
Right.
You know.
Some of it was kind of comedic, though, the way he treated his you know, what do you call him? I guess he's a king, so his subjects.
It does feel like David Bowie is channeling Tim Curry through some of this.
A little bit. You know,
some Tim Curry Rocky Horror going on sometimes with just the looks on his face and the way that he talks to things, and it kind of got that smirk on his face.
I need to look for outtakes in this. There has to be outtakes somewhere.
Oh, I imagine there's a Blu-ray of both of these films, and I imagine there's plenty of outtakes on those.
I watched Sean's 4K. I didn't see last night if there were, then again, it was like 3 a.m. by the time the movie was over. I didn't really want to like flip through to see if there was anything on it. I'm sure there's got to be outtakes or something. There's got to be.
I mean, but there's a lot I did like. I mean, I like the maze part of it. I like the bag woman with the great big thing on their back, and I like the troll guy that's running around.
I like the which door should you go through. There's the one that leads to certain death, and one of us will always tell a lie, one of us will always tell the truth. I'm like, all right, that's I've always loved that scene.
Yeah, I like the puzzles in it as well, like working out the puzzles, and because it feels like a computer, like it feels like an RPG computer game now, or even when you're playing Tomb Raider, it's all about the puzzles and putting the puzzles and doing the puzzles and answering the questions. And I like that aspect of it. I thought that gave a lot of care.
And I like the labyrinth part where she's trying to figure out how to get through, and that she meets the little help along the way, to almost like the Wizard of Oz, kind of, sort of. She meets a few people.
And Jennifer
Connelly, get where she's going.
I can't fault Jennifer Connelly at all. And I can't, I mean, I think the only reason I fault David Bowie is because it seems weird that when she enters this new world that you would have if she didn't have a human there, it would make more sense to me. But I think that's just me. You know,
well, he's technically not a human, is he? He's a goblin.
But he's a human playing a goblin. Goblin, where if it was a Muppet playing a Goblin King, it would all.
I get you. I'm just trying to take up for my boy.
Oh, I mean, I love David Bowie. I love him. I just think.
Oh, I know you do. I'm just fucking with you. But no, I see what you're saying. That might have made a difference. I mean, it did kind of bomb. Well, but I didn't really watch it till it came out on HBO.
Well, I mean, it did really well in Europe, but yeah. I mean, I can't.
Was that around that time?
What year did this come out, actually?
86. This is one of those movies that, like, everybody I knew had the VHS tape of it, so...
Yeah.
You go to...
Well, it's a fan favorite among you know, like, the heathen, Wiccan, jet set kind of people. They love that. That's like, you cannot say anything wrong about the Goblin King, or you'll be hexed. So, I mean, but that's a favorite, you know? It's like a staple, so...
Well, I mean, we grew up on it. If your parents, if you grew up in the 80s and your parents dropped you off at someone's house for the day, you're probably going to watch Labyrinth. Labyrinth is one of those movies that everybody who had a kid had the VHS tape of it. They'd be like, "Yeah, here, put on Labyrinth. Go watch it and shut up."
I remember the boys wanting to watch Emmanuel. That was the big HBO big deal at Cinemax deal in the
90s. I was like 5 or 6. So
well, you weren't five. No, I'm talking about people at Keith were watching Emmanuel on HBO.
15, I'd be watching Emmanuel. 15, I'd be watching Emmanuel for sure.
I gotta get that. To be honest, I think in 1986, I probably was watching like John Hughes films and a lot of 80s. A lot of 80s horror films at this time.
A lot of good stuff came out in 86, 85, 86, 87. It was nonstop. I mean, there was always something to see. There was this fan in the man.
Yeah.
So
So going to see a Jim Henson film like Labyrinth probably wouldn't have been on my scale at that time. I probably would look at watching a Nightmare on Elm Street film or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff.
Which this year you would have gotten Nightmare on Elm Street. No, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 was 85 and 3 was 87. This you would have gotten Friday the 13th 6 this year, which best Friday the 13th movie still.
The 80s were consumed with Friday the 13th and Freddy Krueger and Halloween, and it was just the time of the monster, you know.
But this I mean, there's like Bad Dreams with E.G. Daly and what's his name and with Jennifer Rubens and all that kind of stuff is all coming out.
Bad Dreams
wasn't Terminator around this time.
RoboCop. Terminator, yeah.
The first Terminator was 84. Dreams was still 2 years away in 88. RoboCop was 87.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's all coming out around this time. But this.
Yeah, so I was kind of seeing all that kind of stuff at this time, so that's probably the reason why.
Well, yeah.
I
finally just saw another Terminator the other day ago that I had. Like, Terminator 4, I had no idea it existed. I don't remember who was in it. It was actually not bad, but I'm trying to remember.
That's the one with Christian Bale, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was bored to shit by that.
I loved the Terminator, and I was hungry for something that was Terminator-ish, so... I saw Christian Bale and then I watched it. I didn't think it was not going to win an Oscar, but it kept me engaged.
It kind of went up its own arsehole, a bit like The Matrix.
A little bit.
But I said, great Terminator project, watch Terminator TV series.
I've heard that was good. I've never seen it.
I'm trying to remember if I started that or not.
Sarah Connor.
The way that they wrap it around and stuff like this is good. And it's got the woman from Game of Thrones in it.
I have watched it. Okay, yeah. Emily, what the hell's her name?
Yeah.
I know is she's the crazy Targaryen that totally blasts the Red City.
the one who's sleeping with her brother.
No, she was sleeping with her nephew. He's her nephew. It's Jon Snow's her nephew.
No.
And they ripped me off of Jon Snow.
Lena Headey is the in Terminator, the TV series.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know she was in that. Okay.
It's very good.
I'll have to check it out. I didn't know she was the lead role in that. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, it works really, really well. They did a really good job
Did the season get finished off like where I'm not going to be?
They did two seasons, but the way that they end it kind of makes sense and it keeps it within the film frame
parameters.
Yeah.
But it's not going to say, oh, I got ripped off. I'm watching this and they love
me. No, not at all. And the best thing in it is when the lead singer from Garbage, the group Garbage, comes in as working for the company. But excellent. I highly recommend it. I actually bought it.
Cool. I didn't know because I get really pissed. I get into some of these things and then they just do one season. And then I really liked it a lot, like Emerald City. Loved it. They did one season. I was pissed. Nothing that is not proceeding.
They did two seasons of it and they were able to wrap it up. I mean, could they go on further? Yeah, but they were able to wrap it up. So it kind of does go back into the lore of the film. So you don't feel that cheated. So,
but that's my issue with TV. That's why whenever you're talking about a TV series, like, yeah, I haven't seen it because it's either they underdo it or there's like one or two seasons and the story's still going and there, you know, it never got ended because it got canceled.
Right.
Or on the flip side of it, you have something that's in like season 10. It's like, you don't know when the fuck to end it.
Yeah.
And that's my issue, is that you never get a series that just runs the right amount of time anymore.
No.
There's a Terminator TV series coming out on Netflix soon, so.
Oh, really? A new one?
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be forgotten like everything else on Netflix, because that's what happens. They drop it. Everybody talks about it for 2 days, 2 weeks. And then
sort of like Wednesday. I really love that. Are they going to do another season?
Yeah.
I'll be really pissed if they don't. I really enjoyed the hell out of that.
Yeah.
But that's another one. I don't think it needs a second season. I think it was, you wrapped up the story. I think it was fine. I don't think they implied
there was more story, though. When you imply that there's more story, people like me want more story. Don't do that.
The only thing I'm going to miss in Wednesday season two would be Christina Ricci's character.
Yeah.
But she's got, I got her in Yellow Jacket, so I'm happy. So
I still have not started watching Yellow Jackets. Oh my God.
Juliet Lewis and Melanie Lazinski and Christina Ricci. Fantastic. And Lauren Ambrose from 6 Feet Under.
Really? She's in it too. I've got to start watching it. Excellent. I've got Showtime free for like 3 months. I can bang all.
Yeah, no, binge watch it. The first and second season are fantastic. And if you get some time, the Comic Con, Steel City Comic Con was 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh. And there's some videos on that YouTube that they have Christina Ricci and Juliet Lewis talking about Yellow Jackets. Then they have the Breakfast Club coming out and they have like Thelma Louise.
Oh, did they redo the Breakfast Club?
No, it's the original actors coming out talking about the making of it now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like Molly Ringwald, Ali Sheedy, Judd Nelson, and Anthony Michael Hall. Then they got Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis coming out talking about the making of Thelma and Louise.
I love that movie. That was so well. I just like, that was a Brad Pitt. That was one of his first movies, I think. Yeah. They kept watching him walk away. That was the best view. Yeah. He was really cute in that. He was gorgeous.
I think that was the star-making role for him, right?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, Susan
Sarandon said that to go, well, he did Dallas first. He was in Dallas. That's where he comes from. But she goes, look, they got a pretty face. And Gina Davis said, oh, he's really gorgeous. And he's very charismatic. But they didn't realize what kind of actor he was until that scene where he's with Harvey Keitel and he's questioning them. Brad Pitt improvised that whole scene, made it the
really?
And everything. Yeah, on the spot. And that student's trying to go, that's where I knew he was talented.
He really kind of was. I was reading something the other day ago. I was like, I keep meaning to start watching that Interview with a Vampire. I haven't had a chance to, but they were talking about how, I guess, you know, we were talking about Tom Cruise the other day ago. We were talking about how he was shorter. And I guess there was something going on with him and Louis with the shortness when they were making Interview with a Vampire.
Well, Brad Pitt had to walk around in a ditch.
That's right. You're the one that said it. Okay, that's right. I thought it was going down.
And he had to wear high heel boots through the whole thing. So
that is so wild.
But
that's how some of these actors are, man. They're short and they cannot get over it.
They feel really minimally unmanned by it. I mean, I don't understand because they I don't know. I guess I don't put
Well,
I like dating guys taller than me.
I mean, I know Sylvester. I know Sylvester Stallone is problematic and everything. With maybe Tom Cruise, though, when you look at Lestat, Lestat is supposed to be more powerful and overpowering Daniel. So maybe
an older vampire too.
And maybe it's because of that role. I don't know if Tom Cruise is like that in every movie. But I know in Interview with the Vampire there was that, but that might be.
You know, Nicole Kidman takes digs at him about his height to this day. So yeah. He treated her like shit. So she's just like, go on, Nikki, go get a baby girl.
But I'll put it this way. Horrible. If it wasn't for Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman probably wouldn't have the career she had.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't care. He was kind of she was a shit to Katie Holmes too. I would not date that guy probably if I was any of those ladies. So.
I know.
It's like, that Scientology thing. I don't know anything about it, but it seems like it's a problem.
Well,
rich though, so it must do something good for her.
You're rich, you get away with a lot. So
I guess.
So let's rate Labyrinth, starting with you, Vix. How many stars do you rate Labyrinth?
Can't really give it a 5, but it was a lot of fun. I'll give it a 4 because it's an engaging movie. If you're a David Bowie fan, you're going to love seeing him as the Goblin King. So, I mean, it's definitely something everybody should watch at least once.
And what about yourself, Joe?
I find it interesting that I'm on the opposite side. I love both movies, but I find it odd I'm on the opposite side because I like Labyrinth better. So I'll give Labyrinth 4.5. I don't think it's a 5-star movie, but I think it's definitely a 4.5.
It's a quality movie, though.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just the nostalgia of watching it as a kid. That's and feeling.
Oh, I loved it as a teen.
Feeling the nostalgia while I'm rewatching it. Maybe that's it.
The only movie I thought David Bowie was hot in.
Really? The only one?
Well, I think he looks cool. I like his hair. I think he looks cool. I mean, who wants to be normal? I mean, come on.
You're like, his sister's a mercy hairstyle.
I liked his hair. I did. I liked his hair. I thought his hair was cool.
I'm going to give it 3.5. It kind of bores me a little bit. There's a lot. There's things I do like, and there's a lot of things I don't like. And for me, it's just... Yeah, it's not one I look forward to watching on a regular basis. If it's on, I actually flip through, see if there's something else on. And then if that's the only thing on, I will watch it. But it's only if there's nothing else to watch. So, yeah. Even though I do own a copy of it. So, yeah. Go figure. Well, this brings us to the end of Literature License Podcast. Our next podcast will be anthologies, which will be covering The House of Drip Blood and Asylum. And Doctor Who will be continuing at some point in our lives. And of course, our next book, The Screen, which is Once Upon a Time, will be doing The Month of Dark Fantasy. And we'll be covering The Witches by Roald Dahl and The Witches from 1990. Batman will continue with Harley's Holiday, Make Him Laugh, Lock Up, and Deep Freeze. While our next Dark Family film will be The Black Cauldron by Disney from 1985 and The Spiderwick Chronicles, the film from 2008. So it's good night for myself. Good night, Vix.
Okay.
Good night, Joe.
Good night, everyone.
See you next week for anthologies.
You remind me of the babe.
What babe?
Babe with the power.
Power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe.
I saw my baby.
What could I do?
My baby's love had gone. Left my baby blue. Nobody knew. What kind of magic spell to use?
Mind is new.
Oh, what we don't tell.
Thunder or lightning.
And baby said,
"Who's your
guess?"
Power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe.